Hello there.
Rancho Obi-Wan, the Guinness World Records certified largest Star Wars memorabilia collection, located in Petaluma, California, featuring the collection of super collector, author, and Star Wars fan ambassador Steve Sansweet.
The most powerful Jedi ever.
Visit RanchoObiWan.org and subscribe to the Rancho Obi-Wan Virtual Museum, a fun, authentic fan experience featuring rare photos, videos, Steve Sansweet Q&As, virtual tours of the museum, exclusive behind-the-scenes stories and information, and so much more. Plus, your subscription helps ensure the future of the museum. It's the Rancho Obi-Wan Virtual Museum. Subscribe now at RanchoObiWan.org. Get tons of cool perks, information, and history of Star Wars collecting from the man who knows it best, Steve Sansweet, while contributing to the preservation of the world's largest Star Wars memorabilia collection, RanchoObiWan.org.
Hey, what are you listening to?
What, me?
Yeah.
Oh, didn't think you cared. I'm listening to the Scarif Scuttlebutt podcast.
Ooh, good choice. They have episodes each week. Sometimes they even have two episodes a week.
Oh, that's getting out of hand.
Because now there are two of them.
Now there are two of them. Yes, no more, no less. He's always very entertaining, and he's got a bunch of friends that often join him, and all sorts of fun and informative. I mean, I don't have to tell anybody. You know why?
Why?
Because they're about to listen right now.
Oh, that's right, because they're listening to the Scarif Scuttlebutt podcast.
And that's the Scuttlebutt. Oh, also, we're Pat and Charles from the Conversations podcast.
We forgot that.
It's like we've never done this before.
This podcast is a member of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts and content creators, visit bio.link/red5.
Hey everyone, I'm John.
And I'm Charlie. And we're from Clone Army Radio, and you're about to listen to a brand new episode of Scarif Scuttlebutt Podcast.
Hey, Scuttlebutt Nation, that's right. You've stumbled on the Scarif Scuttlebutt Podcast.
Honest conversation with open hearts.
A place for discussions, breakdowns, and deep dives. This is your safe space when it comes to nerd opinions.
Because just like assholes, we all got them.
Strap in, grab your blaster and some sunscreen.
Because it's always sunny on Scarif.
Oh boy, it's the Scuttlebutt.
And that's the Scuttlebutt.
That's the Scuttlebutt.
Approximately 10 years after the Battle of Yavin, following the deaths of Darth Vader and the Emperor at the Battle of Endor, the Rebel Alliance formed a new republic over much of the galaxy. Long years of struggle have ensued. 10 years later, remnants of the Empire, regaining strength, have reclaimed the majority of worlds, including the city world of Coruscant. Now, a civil war within the resurgent Empire has erupted, and the new republic has seized the opportunity to increase confusion. A recent raid over Coruscant has left Luke Skywalker and Lando Calrissian stranded on the war-torn planet. But help is on the way.
What is up, Scuttlebutt Nation? This is Ro from the Scarif Scuttlebutt Podcast, and welcome to another edition of the show. We are going to be talking about back in the day, if you remember, if you were alive even, it's funny because when I post some of these things from the olden times, a lot of people are like, yeah, I was born in like 2001. I'm like, But anyways, Dark Empire. Tonight to join me on this discussion is registered nerd Danny from Comics and Cosmetics. What is up, girl?
What is up? And how sad is it that we're referring to the 90s as the olden times?
The olden times, yes. The ancient times back in the 1990s. It is very sad.
It was only 10 years ago.
Yeah. I think we're aging out of social media is what it is. Never. No, it's always fun to talk to these young whippersnappers and set their course on the correct pathway there. But absolutely. But before that, we just got off of a stream. We were reacting to the Acolyte trailer, which we were about to do this recording. And then all of a sudden, the Acolyte trailer dropped. If you haven't seen our reaction, we were joined by Dave from What Does Star Wars Mean to You? Find that on the tubes and check it out. Real fast, what'd you think of the trailer?
I thought it was dope.
It was D to the O to the P. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it looked good. I really hope that the show can follow through with what the trailer has given us. So we've been fooled before.
Yes.
Fooled before, so.
Yeah, you know, as they say, cautiously optimistic. But, you know, as a Star Wars fan, I'm always looking forward to new Star Wars, and we'll see what it does. Two episodes in June for its premiere, so that should be kind of cool, like a little mini movie. And I'm gonna keep saying it, but I love Star Wars when it's dark and moody and serious. Mm-hmm. And this looks like it's my cup of tea. So hopefully we'll all be enjoying it, and this will be the one thing that pulls all the fans together. So what else? You know, we'll get into Dark Empire in a minute, but and by the way, thank you to Pat for that wonderful introduction. That was another nice piece of work there by the folks over at Conversations, another one of our wonderful Red 5 Network podcasts. I called them the other day. I called them the jewel of the Red 5 Network, albeit cubic zirconia, but that's just a little technicality. Absolutely. What else do you have going on, Danny? I know you've got your nerd news. Your live shows are back. Mm-hmm. That is very exciting. What's going on over there?
Nerdy News Live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You can join me and a guest or two in the live chat as we discuss all the important stuff you missed in the world of nerdy news that week. So we're going to cover that. And I'm still doing my breakdowns. You know, I'm still covering whatever nerdy topic, character, show, movie, book, what have you, whatever I've been obsessing about that week while doing my makeup at the same time. I do all the research and the hard work for you.
Oh my God. So. You are so devoted to the research. I can't, I can't fathom what it's like, you know, editing and putting that stuff together. It's real. If there's any jewel to the Red 5 Network, you're definitely up there.
Thank you. I love this stuff so much, and I respect it and what it has provided me with in my life. I don't want to get stuff wrong, and I don't want to leave out any pertinent information and possibly, you know, offend or upset someone who loves this specific character. So I try my best to be as respectful as I possibly can about it and, you know, get my stuff right.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I know, you know, the folks that listen and watch you appreciate that. And there's a lot of hard work that goes into putting your show together. All five of them. Yes. excellent. We just did last week. We did an episode on Star Wars coffee table books. And I really enjoyed that conversation. It is something that here's the thing, you know, a lot of times, you know, when there's no new Star Wars, there's not a lot of, you know, topics to touch on. You know, I'll maybe do a five question show or, you know, a quick cut show, and I'll pick a topic and people will come on and we'll discuss. But, you know, someone that follows me made a really great, idea to do a discussion show on the coffee table books. I had posted, I was looking through my Chronicles book, which is a large, heavy coffee table books and book. And somebody said, oh my God, I have that book. We should do a show about it. Which was great. I think that's one of the reasons that I love kind of posting on the internet, posting on Twitter specifically, because you get some really great discussions and you know, ideas for shows. And it's wonderful when I can have, you know, that particular follower come on the show and join me on said discussion. So if you missed that show last week, I think it was a really great show. We covered a lot. And the funny thing is that a lot of people were looking on their Star Wars collectible shelves for coffee table books. A lot of coffee table books that they didn't know they had. And have you ever looked through your stuff and said, wait a minute, I didn't know I had that? Or how do I have two of these? I don't remember buying the first one. Does that ever happen to you?
Yeah, Wonder Woman comics. I ended up with a couple of Catacombs, I think. I think it was Catacombs. It was like, oh, I didn't know I had two of those. So I gave one to a nephew. But I've moved around a lot without having to dig into personal lives, but I've moved around a lot and, you know, I had some struggles. So I've lost a lot of my collectibles. So when you say, has it ever happened to you? But do you have extra? I'm like, actually, the opposite.
Where is my stuff?
Where is my stuff? I found out recently that my mother, see, we had the original trilogy on VHS when I was a kid. And I mean, I almost wore those tapes out. That's how I grew up with Star Wars. That we had Laserdisc. We had all three on Laserdisc. And that's how I discovered them because I was very little. But she had the original trilogy on VHS and I wanted those. So I go by her house and I'm looking and I see the special edition box set. I'm like, hey, where's the original trilogy? She's like, it's right there. So no, that's special edition, lady. That's 1997. Where's the other ones? And she's like, oh, I got rid of them. I'm sorry. You what now? You did what? Well, I didn't need them anymore. The what? No. A New Hope goes for like $35,000 on eBay. You are not sitting here telling me you did not need George Lucas's original version of these movies that he refuses to allow in production. Yeah. You cannot be telling me this. She donated it to a nursing home. And I'm like, you know what? Still mad. You know, I don't care. I don't care. You're reading nice things for geriatrics. They don't care about Star Wars. That generation hasn't hit the nursing homes yet, lady.
That's too funny and tragic. Yeah,
it is tragic.
I donated them to an orphanage. Yeah, I'm going down there and I'm kicking some kids' butts.
Yeah, I'm taking them back.
I'm getting them back. Yeah.
Those are mine. Bad. Back, you little urchins.
It's funny because I, you know, from time to time, I do notice that I've got like two of something and I'm like, I don't remember buying this. Or maybe I got it as a gift and I already had it. But there's a shelf down there where I was kind of looking for, I think Scott Rifen was talking about the Star Wars in Concert program book that was a large format picture book, which was really great. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for that. And while I was looking, I looked in the back of one of my shelves and I'm like, I don't remember having this Star Wars toaster. And it was a Star Wars toaster that was still in the box.
Dave would poop his pants.
Back there. So weird.
Dave would poop his pants. He loves toast. He really does. This is serious. He has a very deep love for toast.
That's
and
too funny.
He went by Hobby Lobby one day and they had those Star Wars appliances and they had the toaster. Mm-hmm. I think it was a Baby Yoda toaster. And then they had the Death Star waffle maker and they had Luke's lightsaber emulsifier. I'm like, I want the emulsifier because it's a lightsaber hilt. He's like, really? You don't want the toaster? I'm like, no. But I just remembered that I do have two of something and Dave got it for me.
Oh, nice.
When we owned the salon still, he went by the beauty supply store to pick up a few things and they had Wonder Woman brushes. I don't know if you can.
Yeah,
and Wonder Woman brushes. And he got me two of them, one to rock and one to stock.
Very nice. I like that. I like that. Very nice.
Yay.
Cool beans.
But are we talking about collectibles today? Is that
no? That's a little warm up. But you know, speaking of Star Wars, I mean, Dark Empire back in the 90s or back in the day. What year did it come out? Dark Empire, Dark Horse Comics, 1988.
Did it really come out in 88? I thought it was 90.
Maybe it was 90. Yeah.
And Dark Horse Comics, man, that I'm telling you, that Dark Empire solidified Dark Horse Comics.
Yes. I think, you know, Star Wars belonged to Marvel for a while. They did the novelizations, the comic book versions of the movies. And then Dark Horse picked up the license in the 90s. I think the Star Wars run of Dark Horse really put Dark Horse on the map, as you said. The artwork for Dark Empire was incredibly vibrant as well. Chef's kiss, as the kids are saying these days. And I think, who's the artist? Tom Kennedy, I think it was. I
did not look that up.
And written by, somebody's name is Tom. Tom Veitch?
Tom somebody.
Yeah. And Cam Kennedy, I think, is the artist or the writer. Should have that in our notes, but we are flying by the seat of our pants for sure. And we're going to have a couple of voicemails as well. Some of our followers submitted some voicemails to talk a little bit about the Dark Empire. Absolutely. And what'd you find?
The writer is Tom Veitch.
Yes.
And the illustrator is Cam Kennedy.
There you go.
We've got Jim Baikie. I probably pronouncing that horribly. He is the penciler and inker. Louis Buchalis is a letterer. Todd Klein is a letterer. And Dave Dorman was the cover artist.
Yes. Dave Dorman is, you see him from time to time at artist alleys. And if you ever get a chance to go up to him and at least shake his hand, great artist, wonderful art on some of the books that he has done. And Dark Empire, for sure. There are how many books? There were 8 covers.
Oh my gosh.
There was, I think. Hold on. Because I saved them.
It was
them.
A lot longer. It was longer than I thought it was going to be. It's a pretty decent run.
Run. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So Dark Empire. There are some things that surprised me, and obviously I had not read it in a long time, but what did you find when you were, you know, you started reading the Dark Empire? And I too said to myself, wow, there's a next episode. There's another story. And I kept going and going and going. And I think that's one of the things that surprised me. I didn't realize it was so long. You know, the biggest things that I do remember, obviously, were all the covers. You had, dark Luke Skywalker, in front of the World Devastator, craft. You had young Palpatine returning again and again. What are some of the things that surprised you when you're rereading the story?
It surprised me how much I liked it immediately. Okay. They really captured the voice of Star Wars in these comics. Not just the overall, it felt like Star Wars. It felt like Han, Luke, Leia, Lando, 3PO, R2. It felt like them so much that you could hear them. As you're reading it, you could hear the dialogue. I could hear Harrison Ford's voice and Carrie Fisher's voice. I could hear that dialogue so clearly in my head. Like, they really, really nailed the personalities of these characters, and the story made sense. Sure, it made a lot of sense. I really feel like this was the sequel we wanted. We needed. And you can tell that elements from it were used for the sequel trilogy.
Yes, I was going to mention that.
But think just kind of like, well, we'll take this. But no, don't give any explanation. No explanation needed. We'll just take this there. Now, put everything else around it. But explain nothing. Explain nothing.
Right.
The comic did a really good job of build up and exposition. I felt like really, really well done.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I was going to mention some similarities between this story and some elements of the sequel trilogy. And there's even a frame where Luke Skywalker is standing in front of a couple of AT-ATs, very similar to what that middle film did on that salt planet.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have to remember. Don't worry about it. Don't go back. I know it's traumatizing for you, but
it's too painful. Too painful.
Yeah, it's so that you know. You're right. There are similarities, and obviously the biggest similarities is that Palpatine returned the first time around. But it's interesting. You know, there are certain elements of the story that, as when I read it the first time back in the day, I really thought they were fascinating story elements, like the fact that. Luke and was it Lando? They were on a mission and they actually captured a Star Destroyer. Mm-hmm. I think that was fascinating to me as a kid, because obviously growing up with the original trilogy, you know, the bad guys are the ones that were driving the Star Destroyers. And to know that, you know, they kind of captured one after Return of the Jedi, I think was fascinating to me. The fact that, you know, Luke kind of senses evil, kind of poking his head around and wants to find out and get to the bottom of where is this evil coming from. It was also kind of a really neat way of introducing, you know, I guess the overall concept of what the story is going to entail. And, you know, it gave us an interesting look into, you know, the question of, is Luke going to turn to the dark side? Because I think later, you know, during the story, it kind of hints at him, you know, turning dark. Obviously, there's the story continues, there's some twists and turns. But, you know, it really goes in that direction where Luke is, you know, is finally turned and Palpatine kind of wins.
And to me, that seems like the natural progression for that sort of conflict in regards to direct sequels to the original trilogy. Like what other kind of conflict can you have with Luke other than him struggling against the temptation to turn to the dark side? It just makes good character development sense to me as a writer. Like, are we just going to make him perfect forever? No. And especially with Star Wars being inspired by Dune, that's what happens to Paul Atreides. Mm-hmm. The same thing happens. He's tempted by the ease of this, you know, we'll say dark side. Right. And for Luke, it's more of a, I want to know why my father turned. I want to know what was so great about the dark side that he turned away from everything. I liked that. I liked that. And the fact that he felt stuck. He felt like he had no choice but to allow Palpatine to tempt him. I mean, and if Luke is totally faking it the whole time, Palpatine's going to know.
Right.
Palpatine's going to sense that. So sure. It has to be legitimate. There has to be a seed of that doubt inside of him in order for him to pull this off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he realizes that, well, I can't kill him. He'll just pop into another one of his cloned bodies, or he could even pop into me and possess me and take over my body. I mean, this is how we learn how Darth Plagueis the Wise lived so long.
Right.
He learned how to possess other bodies. And that's what that's why Palpatine returned. Okay. It wasn't somehow. It was he set up a whole cloning farm for himself and learned how to transport his essence, his spirit, into those cloned bodies. And here he is telling Luke, like, kill me all you want. This is just a shell. I'll come back. I'll keep coming back.
Yeah. Temptation is present in a lot of stories in mythology. Obviously, the biggest temptation story is comes from Christianity, mm-hmm. and it's interesting. I find it that here it definitely works. It's one of those story aspects that if you plug it in any piece of literature, it just works, because I think it's part of the questioning of humanity's nature. Yeah. You just mentioned, the fact that, what made the dark side so intriguing for Anakin to kind of cross over. And I think that is a very multifaceted answer. Obviously, I want to save the ones, he said it in the movie, I want to save the ones that I love from dying. There's all aspects of why it was that he chose the dark side. So mm-hmm. it's kind of not a black and white answer. Anakin had his reasons, which is another topic altogether, but it's fascinating to me.
Goodness gracious me.
I'm sorry, honey. I can't. It's not happening.
It's okay, sweetie. I'm sure this happens to many Force sensitives. Don't worry about it for tonight.
Yeah, I guess. Thanks for understanding. I wish there was something I can do about my low M count.
Yeah.
Fact is, 1 in 3 Jedi suffer from some level of RD. Rank denial happens to many species regardless of age, limbs, or star system of origin. One thing they have in common? They meditated on it. And God help.
Hey, look, honey. The MSE droid just delivered my prescription of Emster.
That's great, honey. I'm so happy for you.
I'm so happy for us.
That's right. And now it'll be hard for them not to grant you the rank of master.
Oh, yeah.
Emster chewables come in a variety of flavors from Melu Run to Tonyuray. Who knows? Maybe even you can boost your M count and become a Jedi with a little training. Side effects include mood swings, suspicion, fear, anger, hate, and suffering.
I don't know what all this trouble is about, but I'm sure it must be your fault.
Hey friends, just a quick reminder, if you enjoy our content and don't want to commit to a Patreon tier, you can show your love in other ways.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, you can take advantage of our merchandise store at TeePublic, where we've got cool designs from all across the Red 5 network. Look for sale announcements and save up to 30 to 35% on all our merchandise.
Oh, nice.
And there's also a very convenient way to help support the channel. As you know, coffee is our friend. It keeps us going. You can show your appreciation by heading over to buymeacoffee.com/scarif.
buymeacoffee.com/scarif.
Any amount starting at $5, a one-time treat for us to help with all the stuff it takes to maintain the quality you deserve. And remember, it's always sunny on Scarif, and that's the Scuttlebutt. And pass the cream, please. One of the things that cracked me up, and you said that the writing really captured the voice of some of the characters. Mm-hmm. And there's one line that I wrote down in my notes, something that Han said, which was, I totally read it in Harrison Ford's voice. He was talking about how when Leia, kind of realized what was going on with Luke, and they were trying to get Luke back, and
yeah,
they were
exactly
risking their lives. It. He said, they told me being married to a Jedi won't be easy. And again, I read that almost with Harrison Ford's like voice in my head. I think they did a really great job mm-hmm. of like you said, of putting the character voices in the writing, which is a great thing.
It's hard to do, too. It's not easy, especially when they didn't write those movies. They weren't familiar in that kind of intimate sense. So, I mean, that's a tough thing to pull off. So hats off to them. The one that really stood out with me that I heard so clear with Harrison was like, oh, Luke is such a Jedi master. How come I have to keep saving him? Why does right. he need me to keep rescuing him? Like, yeah. that's a total Han thing to say.
Absolutely. One of the things, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about borrowed elements from other shows. And actually, obviously, since this came first, before the prequels, before Rogue One, there are a lot of elements in this that I found very familiar. There's an old lady character named Vima.
Yes.
Who was almost, she reminded me of Chirrut when it comes to like the Church of the Force, mysticism sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think there are, like I said, there's a lot of similarities to those two characters. There's another aspect of, and I can't remember, I think Star Wars had released in the early 90s, released some audio dramas. I think based on some of the novels or not, they were their own original things. You know, Han Solo had a trilogy of books. Lando Calrissian had a trilogy of books. Han Solo at Star's End comes to mind. But we get to see Han Solo's apartment, I think, for the first time, which is kind of weird.
Because he had a droid.
Yeah, ZZ.
And didn't Han have like, he wasn't a big fan of droids, you know, like it just kind of surprised me that Han would have a droid.
Yes. And it's, you know, kind of like a house droid, keeping, obviously, you know, Han and Chewie are gallivanting around the galaxy and somebody's got to, you know, vacuum the front room when Han is away.
And
right.
And it wasn't ZZ.
Yeah. So here's a funny thing that I have in my notes too. Do you remember the, Han's ex-girlfriend's name?
Is it?
I'll give you
Minky or
Minky. Hi, Minky. No, it's not Minky. No, are you thinking of Mako? That was his friend.
Yeah.
I guess he kind of played the Lando Calrissian role. A friend of Han who later kind of betrays him. But Han's ex-girlfriend's name, you might recognize if you're a big Indiana Jones fan, Sala.
Oh yeah, that's right. Sala.
Which I found kind of cool.
Listen, I read this like 3 weeks ago.
Well, I'm cheating too. I got notes here. So, don't worry about that, notes. My friend.
That's right. Yes, Sala. I do remember that. I'm like, oh, that's a nice little nod to Indiana Jones.
And Sala looks a little rugged, if you know what I mean. She's quite a ruffian.
She's no Leia.
She's no Leia. No, but it's you know, one of the other really great things is you. I think you see some ships in the background when you see a lot of the space battles in the comic book, you see an E-wing, which is really cool. The E-wing was, you saw that in Ahsoka for the first time. And I can't remember, there is a ship in Rogue One. I don't think that's the E-wing. All these letters. I think that was the V-wing. I don't know. Can't remember all that stuff.
It was nice to, like, when they said where they were going to get to his apartment, Nar Hutta, and they went to Nar Shaddaa. I was like, well, that makes sense. Of course, Han Solo would live there.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's really cool to kind of see some of the, you know, like little extra tidbits. Again, just getting away from the original trilogy, which is at, you know, at that point, that's all we had. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of fun to see all this other stuff that is part of the history of the original trilogy characters. You know, Han's you know, ex-girlfriends, his apartment. I think that's pretty cool. You know, getting back to Palpatine's plan, and it seems like, you know, his plan to jump bodies was obviously prevalent in the story. But I always felt like that was his plan with Anakin, you know, in the prequels. It just so happens that his body was damaged because of the fight with Obi-Wan mm-hmm. on Mustafar. But I think, you know, when we first heard the term clone in the original Star Wars, you know, our little child brains were like, I'm sure, you know, because clone was not a prevalent word in a 7-year-old's vocabulary, no. I don't think, for the most part. We're like, wow, what's a clone? As we get, you know, obviously as we get older, we get to learn, you know, as science fiction fans, what a clone is. And obviously in the real world, we have the sheep that was cloned in the news.
It was a Dolly.
Dolly, I think it was Dolly. So, you know, we get to see, you know, some real world application of the word clone, which kind of, you know, fires up our imagination. But, you know, fast forward to the sequel trilogy and we get Palpatine kind of doing the same thing. What are some of the other similarities that you noticed between this story and some of the stuff that happened in the sequel trilogy? And you don't have to go so deep because I know don't want to traumatize you again.
Well, I mean, really the thing that stands out the most is the cloning, Palpatine having that plan to come back through cloning, trying to get Luke to join him. You know, that was kind of like I don't even want to say her name. The Rey Palpatine, like he's trying to get her. What I liked about this story was not how it was similar to the sequels. To me, it was what the sequels were lacking.
Yeah, I could see that.
And like
what they should have been?
Yes. What they should have been. Like if you were going to take inspiration from Dark Empire, you should have just done Dark Empire. Because it's so good. Like his ultimate plan is to get Leia and be her baby. He wants to take over the baby's body.
Right.
Because it's super powerful, super baby, mm-hmm. you know, Anakin's grandchild. And that was deep and emotional. You know, this is her child. And seeing Luke and Leia being, you know, their Wonder Twin powers combined, they're able right. to destroy Palpatine like once and for all. That's what Lucas, I feel, really intended by having them being twins, period. Mm-hmm. Because the Force, you know, the whole thing is about balance. And you can't have balance with just one person or just one thing. You need at least two.
Like a dyad?
Like a dyad. Oh. Like a dyad. So it felt like for the only time and we get to see Luke and Leia really be Luke and Leia, what they were intended to be, something that we never got in live action. And I think that would have been so much better. And it just the whole philosophy behind it, how it just seems so much deeper and thought-provoking and intriguing and exciting than what we got with the sequels. I mean, why didn't you do this?
Exactly. Well, it's, you know, as they say, it's neither here nor there, but I even the characterization of Luke, I mean, if you were wondering, you know, what his allegiance were, during Dark Empire, you know, like I mentioned earlier, there were some ebbs and flows. You didn't know whether he was going dark side or if he was mm-hmm. trying to trick Palpatine there. But I think there would have been some really great roller coaster drama mm-hmm. and try to figure out. But I think at the end, you know, obviously, you know, Luke Luke still cares about his family. Luke still was, that powerful Jedi that was able to defeat, Palpatine in a way that I guess made sense more so in this story than in the sequel trilogy, for me at least. And I think, like you said, I think there should have been a balance. I always say that George Lucas did the heavy lifting right before he sold to Disney. He was able to convince these actors to kind of come back. The rest is
well, they bought his treatments,
right?
Which this is kind of what was supposed to happen with Leia ending up being the true one to bring balance to the universe. She was going to lead the Republic. He gives them these treatments that they wanted so bad, and then they wiped their beeholes with them and came up with some half done, half thought hot garbage.
Yeah.
You had the whole world in your hands, Bob Iger.
You had one job. Okay, folks, it's time to tell you about our patrons, wonderful people that support the Scare Scuttlebutt podcast through our Patreon page. First up, we got Nicholas Schaefer. You may know him by his professional name, Backyard TARDIS. Don't forget, he's got a YouTube channel, Adventures in Locksmithing. If you think rekeying is all he does, well, head on over to his channel and prepare for the fun. And we can't forget our executor tier, Scott and Kim of the Used and Abused podcast, along with Nicole. Peace, love, and fandoms. Join this Red 5 pod in the chat whenever they go live for fun and shenanigans. Take the jump to hyperspace to our Garrison tier. Big thanks to The Frank, longtime supporter and resident Back to the Future expert. Why don't you log in and say hello? What's up, Frank? And we've got Melanie Marquita. I love saying her name.
Melanie Marquita.
Big hugs to you, my friend. One of my favorite collaborators. All right, we got Comics and Cosmetics. Danny, licensed super nerd. Her YouTube channel's got the latest nerd news and some incredibly well-researched tidbits on comics and cosmetics. Go give her a sub. Big shout out to Alex, the salty nerd himself. Big thanks. And someone who brings joy to my timeline, Belinda. So glad you're on our list. A heartfelt thanks to my friend Greg at Rebel Base Card. So much card knowledge. Go give him a follow. I also want to say thanks to some of our other special followers like Vader Rapina and Rennie. And of course, I'd like to think that this follower was the show's first follower, Ali K and family. Thank you guys for your support. Big thanks to all our patrons and friends of the podcast. If you're interested in helping to keep us going strong around here and get some exclusive Scarif swag and content,
head on over to patreon.com/scarifscuttlebutt.
Remember, we can't have the scuttle without the butt.
Hello, kids and cadets. It's Tim from the FSF Popcast, and you are listening to the Scarif Podcast. And that, my friends, is the Scuttlebutt.
We have an incoming transmission from the Scarif Scuttlebutt Hotline, Commander, and we can't withstand a voicemail of this magnitude!
We were able to get a couple of voicemails from some folks that wanted to chime in, and let us play the first one. Ed Zimmerman says the following.
Good morning, Scuttlebutt Nation. This is Ed Zimmerman, the editor of SciFiHistory.net, and I'm responding to your post online regarding Dark Empire back from the Dark Horse comic days. Gosh, it's hard to put it all into quick thoughts, but I wasn't as big a fan of the Dark Empire series as others were back in the day. I thought it was good. What I think I liked about it most was the fact that Tom Veitch, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, the writer and creator of it, what I liked about it was it seemed like he was trying to build on the established mythology of Star Wars. He took the characters, the situations, and wanted to kind of push them to slightly different directions than what George Lucas had done on the silver screen. I do believe, if I have my facts correct, that it was an approved story by Lucasfilm. They were somewhat involved early on in the process. Unlike the Star Wars of today, which feels more like instead of expanding on the mythology, they think just by creating new characters, they are building on it, but they're really not. They're more so today, they're playing in the universe that Lucas created, not really building on it in any great textural way. But back to Dark Empire, I think that what I didn't like about it was they simply brought Palpatine back. And I know everybody's a fan of the big villain, and they thought it was a wonderful extension of what was on the film, or I'm sorry, what was in the films. But for me, I just I wish they had somehow created a different villain. That's why I liked the Timothy Zahn books better, because they, you know, created a new threat for the universe that the rebels and the team of Luke, Han, and Leia and Chewbacca could face and confront in all new in new ways. So that's my take on it. I know it might be controversial, but that's what I do. Hope this helps. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you again sometime.
Well, thanks. Thanks so much to Ed Zimmerman. He gave us our, you know, his take on Dark Empire. And yeah, that's. I hear that from time to time. You know, I guess the act of bringing Palpatine back, obviously, you know, now during the Disney era is something that is kind of prevalent. But back then, it was fairly new. It was fairly fresh. But what do you think of his comment regarding, you know, he wishes that we had another villain. Obviously, we get a new villain in the Timothy Zahn books. But were you okay with Palpatine returning in the books, or did you somehow feel that maybe there should have been another big baddie?
I was okay with him returning in Dark Empire because of the way they did it and how it really felt like closure for all of that. It was a good Palpatine story. It was a good, I mean, of course. Okay. So like in the prequels, when he talks about, have you ever heard of the story of Darth Plagueis the Wise? We're all like, I'm sorry, what now?
Yeah.
Who, what? I would, yeah. Please tell me more. Mm-hmm. Well, we had gotten more for those of us who hadn't read those comics. That is how Darth Plagueis the Wise lived forever. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a neat way. I mean, you can't say it really tied together the prequels
right.
Kind of like bring it to our attention. It was a neat way to bring that mysticism in to Palpatine, because that's what he was. He was the mysticism of the dark side. And we never really got that in the original trilogy. So this was a nice way to introduce the Sith mysticism and really give Luke and Leia the opportunity to flex their force muscles and become who they needed to become, as powerful as they needed to become. And, you know, for her to become with child and Palpatine basically try to steal the child, you know, the new hope for the Jedi Order that's in her womb. I liked how they framed it. I think that was good. It was a good way for them to kind of step out on their own as hero characters.
Sure.
They had to really evaporate, like totally obliterate the ghosts from the past. Yeah. I'm saying if they brought him back after that, it would be like, okay, we've done this.
Right.
we've already done this. Let's get somebody new. And then you
sure.
Can do the whole Thrawn thing. I get what he's saying. But I feel like this was a good way to be like, okay, we've acknowledged the original trilogies were new people writing these new stories about these characters. So we're going to acknowledge the original story and use it to introduce them to a whole new world.
Whole new world. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, but I think if they introduced another bad villain, the struggle between our original heroes probably wouldn't have meant as much. I think the fact that Palpatine returned in this story, I don't know, it gives it a sense of gravitas, especially like you said, because Luke and Leia are working together, mm-hmm. Wonder Twin powers activate and all that stuff. And I think it definitely, like I said, I think it means something more. It's kind of a heavier, you know,
yes,
it's a heavier topic. It's more poignant. I like that word.
The fans already have an emotional connection. We know this character.
Sure, yeah.
We know who he is. And how accepting and interested do you think fans really would have been had it been just some brand new big bad guy they'd never heard of before and just kind of threw him out there? I think this was a good way to get the fans in.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, and really devil's advocate. I mean, you know, Timothy Zahn did spectacular with a brand new villain in his novels.
Well, but you're also just comparing apples to diamonds there because.
Sure. Or cubic zirconias. thank you very much. Conversations podcast. But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it's it all depends on how well the writing is, how well the characterization and the relationships between these characters are. And I think that's the whole key. I mean, you can do anything, as long as, the story makes sense, the, mm-hmm. You know, the dialogue between characters makes sense and all that stuff.
And there's actual growth, character development, sure. Like that's important. It gets stagnant and stale. And, you know, the last year there's been a lot of rumor and talk coming from Disney executives saying that they want to mothball the original characters because they're just museum pieces now and blah, blah, blah. I think they're afraid of the stagnation because they're not very good at character development these days.
All right. We got another voicemail from KS Geekman. Let's see what KS has to say.
Hello there. Hey, Scuttlebutt. Just wanted to tell you how much I loved The Dark Empire, coming off the heels of reading Heir to the Empire and having seen a new story with Luke, Han, Leia, Lando, Chewbacca, R2, 3PO, reading that and then walking into my comic shop and seeing this beautiful cover of Dark Empire number one and then the continuing covers. Oh, by the way, this is KS Geekman. From Instagram and stuff and Twitter. Anyways, man, Cam Kennedy's art was phenomenal, blew me away. Everything was so unique, but yet, very familiar. And, the watercolors done on that and then Dave Dorman's covers were just magnificent. Visual storytelling at its finest. Of course, it had been a long time since we'd seen anything visual from Star Wars and new storytelling at the time. So I was willing to pretty much accept and receive anything. So I loved the story, and I loved that Dark Horse launched their ownership of the license for Star Wars in that way. It was phenomenal. It was reigniting my passion and love for Star Wars as I had matured into a 19-year-old kid instead of the, you know, 5-year-old kid, 6-year-old kid that I was when Star Wars first came out. So I loved Dark Empire. It was influential. It was a magnificent moment of Star Wars pop culture history. Thanks. See you guys.
Hey, Star Wars fans and friends of the podcast. Don't forget to leave the guys a voicemail for a chance to be included in the discussion. Let them know what's on your mind. Call 773-234-8659. And that's the Scuttlebutt.
Yeah, thank you, KS. He brings in an interesting point, and I think it's something that I have been talking about on Twitter with some folks regarding, you know, the ability to to see Star Wars, obviously, when we were younger, as little kids, the fascination that the story, the visuals brought to us. And as we get older, do we see Star Wars the same way? He mentions the fact that the 19-year-old self really was captivated by the story of Dark Empire when it first came out in the comic books. And I think, whether you're 19 years old or 9 years old, I think the universal aspect of Star Wars when it comes to imaginative storytelling, characters, story arcs, all that wonderful stuff, I think that would still apply no matter how old you are. I think the wonder, and it's all magic. And I think we respond to a certain way to magical stories at whatever age you are. And I know, there are some vocal accounts on there that say Star Wars was made for 12-year-old kids. But I think, yeah, Star Wars is younger. Right. I mean, Star Wars is for young people, but I think Star Wars is for young people at heart. And I think at any age, you can be young at heart. And I think, something will always resonate with people of any age when it comes to Star Wars and, these great stories that we've come to appreciate, since 1977. I think there's something to be said about, this franchise. It's one of the older franchises. I know you and I talk a little bit about Star Trek from time to time. Mm-hmm. Star Trek is also, up there in age. But there's nothing on the planet when it comes to pop culture with the the stories of a galaxy far, far away. But absolutely agree with KS regarding the art. We talked about the covers, but it's fantastic. What do you think of KS's comment?
I completely agree. That was something I did notice was the use of watercolors. Yeah. Which it was a bold choice if you consider that, especially for the time, mm-hmm. 1990, the 90s, late 80s, early 90s. It was all about the United Colors of Benetton, the bright
exactly.
colors. And they chose this more, I don't want to say muted, but more reserved, almost tone-wise, more reserved watercolor, a softer look to it. It was like during the battles and everything, that juxtaposition between this big, violent action battle scene, but it's beautifully illustrated with these hues of pink and purple and green. That watercolor technique was stunning and a very unique and, dare I say, risky choice for a Star Wars comic. But it paid off entirely. You forget, the writing and the direction and composition of these comics are so brilliantly done that at some point, you stop consciously acknowledging that you're reading a comic book and you're just seeing it all in your head. You can hear the actors' voices. You can hear the explosions and the pew pews. But the art style was just an interesting choice and it really paid off in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things I enjoyed about the watercolor style is that it wasn't precise. I think you mentioned the space battles. I think there were, we always joke around about coloring outside the lines, and I think this did it in a way that it made sense in the sense of a Star War. I think the notion that the watercolor, or I guess the texture that the watercolor brought to the story of the artwork specifically, really, it was that it was messy. Star Wars mm-hmm. or wars are messy. And I think you're right. It was very risky. The colors were not precise. There was such a visual layering style that they you know, they took upon themselves when they created some of these panels. And I know there's, you know, I love overlapping panels. I love when colors kind of bleed into other scenes and stuff like that. The panels on the inside of these comic books were really, really great. And I think they demonstrated a unique command of the, you know, I'm going to say the lack of precise lines. There was a certain flow to the style of how they colored this that, you know, sometimes something you expected to be a certain color wasn't. And I think they played with shade a lot, which gave me even more of a feeling of mystery and hiding things which was great because obviously Palpatine, you know, returning is kind of that weird little mysterious force lore thing that it's more ethereal really than practical. So I think the watercolors really, you know, like you said, I think they really work.
Hello.
Hi, this is Sean from Extra Star Wars.
Oh.
And you're listening to the Scarif Scuttlebutt.
Hey, what's going on? This is CJ from The Rundown, and you're listening to the Scarif podcast, and that's the Scuttlebutt.
And away we go!
Dark Empire, you know, final thoughts. I think, you know, we will agree that for a book that was created back in the day, in the 90s, I think, you know, the story really worked. I think we mentioned that, you know, it put Dark Horse kind of back on the map when it comes to, you know, comic book lores, you know, comic book collections. But I think Dark Horse, it's one of my favorite runs, really, the entire Dark Horse comic run for Star Wars. And I know, you know, later, you know, after the 2000s, the Star Wars IP came back to Marvel, obviously. But I think I will always treasure my Dark Horse run of Star Wars comics. Besides the stories, I think, you know, they really put great attention to detail in the in the artwork. I'm going to go back to my office, you know, one of these days and kind of dig them all up and kind of admire them again, because, you guys on the voicemails mentioned the wonderful artwork that these covers had. And yeah, Dave Dorman obviously is a wonderful artist for the covers of Dark Empire. But what are your final thoughts on the story? Love it? Hate it?
Love it. It is some of the best. It's right up there with Heir to the Empire for me. It's some of the best Star Wars storytelling I've ever had the pleasure of reading, that I've ever been exposed to. And I think it holds up today. It still holds up. It's still a really good story. It has aged beautifully. I mean, it really puts a lot of present day Star Wars content to absolute shame. And they should be paying attention. They should be doing their research into their own IP.
Yeah, for sure. But I enjoyed it. The one last thing in my notes, I go, Luke force projected again. But absolutely. You know, if you have an opportunity to catch Dark Empire somewhere, we'll go ahead and put a link in the description to see. Down in the description below of the podcast, it's a free website. Just check it out. You'll be able to read it and scan a couple of stories there. But it is a very interesting story, both creatively and historically. Now that we have the sequels, people will be able to kind of compare and contrast. As we've done today on the Scarif podcast. And if you guys do want to leave us some more voicemails, please do so at 773-234-8659 or record yourself and email them over to me at, scarifscuttlebutt@gmail.com. But Danny, thank you so much for joining me on this edition of the Scarif podcast, talking about Dark Empire, a long time in the planning, but I'm glad we finally got it in the can.
We're busy, important people, Ro. We're busy, important people. Stuff happens.
Absolutely. 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 Thank you again. And why don't you tell folks that are listening where people can find you to say hello there?
You can find me on YouTube at Comics and Cosmetics, TikTok, Threads, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky. I'm literally everywhere. You'll see me going live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch, actually, Twitch as well, giving you your nerdy news for that week with a guest or some friends or whatever. And if you really want to learn more about certain character, story, what have you, then Comics and Cosmetics is the channel for you, because I have 600 plus videos talking about all my favorite nerd stuff. And a lot of that is me doing my makeup at the same time, because I need something to do with my hands.
Absolutely. Excellent. Excellent. Nerdy pros are our jam. And Danny, thank you so much. We are both part of the Red 5 Network. When you see that hashtag, we look good in red, or Red 5 family. And one more, we are Red 5. Check out the rest of the Red 5 Network family over at bio.link/red5. There will be a content creator that is discussing nerdy news or nerdy deep dives or whatever it is that all the nerds are talking about over at the Red 5 Network. But thank you guys for joining us on this edition of the Scare Scuttlebutt podcast. Until next time, that is the Scuttlebutt. Danny, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Listener, just a reminder that the podcast you just heard is a proud member of the Red 5 Network family. Red 5 Network offers you a great variety of shows you'll be sure to love. So the next time you're itching for quality content,
make sure you head over to red5network.com.
You'll find this podcast along with a whole lot more.
All wings report in.
It's the Red 5 Network.